I'm your host, Ben Kerr. With me, as always, is Dave Gove. Dave, how's it going tonight?
Fantastic. How are you?
Good, good. Well, it's been a busy couple of weeks around the NHL. They awarded the Stanley Cup since our last show, but I think most people know that the Pittsburgh Penguins won, and there's not a lot more analysis that we can do with that. But tomorrow is the NHL draft, and with that comes the turning of the page to another league year. And so let's look at what's going on in the offseason so far, and as well as a preview of the NHL draft at the end of our show. So Dave, let's start with the first major trade of the offseason. I know there's been a bunch of minor ones, but the first major one was the Tampa Bay Lightning sending Jonathan Drouin to the Montreal Canadiens in exchange for prospect Mikhail Sergachev, who played on the Memorial Cup champion Windsor Spitfires. Dave, what did you think of the deal for the two sides?
I think it's good for Tampa Bay. I was a little surprised that Montreal made this move. I mean, I know they need help offensively, but I think this works out better currently for Tampa Bay because they need a defensive help right now, and this is a guy that hopefully can do that within the next year or two. So, I mean, obviously he's going to – I just don't know how much he's going to affect them initially, but I think Drouin is a guy that obviously had some issues in Tampa Bay, and I'm not surprised that he eventually got shipped off just based on the way that his coach and him have somewhat strenuous relationship according to certain people. So we'll see if that changes in Montreal. But as a Habs fan, what do you make of this?
So you got a 22-year-old coming off a 53-point season, just about to turn the corner and get into the prime of his career. Hasn't been given a whole lot of ice time or prime power play time with Tampa, and was still one of their best players in terms of points per 60, in terms of all kinds of metrics, and was great for them on the power play. Played as a winger, which really isn't a need for Montreal, not to the extent that center is. And so the question I have here is, we've seen him play center in junior. Are the Canadiens planning on flipping him to center? He's got all the talent in the world. And if you told me a year ago that with the 9th overall pick, Montreal was going to take a talented forward who would impact their team by the start of next season, I would have been ecstatic with that. I would have said that's great. I'm not worried that he's a little bit, you know, he's now going to be 22. I mean, that's still really young in the league. So I like the move from the Habs perspective. I think they need to do a little bit of building on the left side of their defense now, as Sergachev was very much the future there. But I think he might be NHL ready this fall, but he's not going to be top four NHL ready for at least a couple more years in my mind. I don't think he's going to be the really big impact defenseman right away. And I think Drouin is going to be that impact forward right away for the Canadiens. And I think that's something that they need. They just could not score enough goals. And to me, when you have Carey Price in net, your focus should be on scoring enough goals, because I think that Carey Price can really mask some deficiencies in your defense if you have those. And you still have got Shea Weber. You still got Jeff Petrie. Andre Markov is not signed right now, but he's fully expected to be back. So there's a lot going on here. The big question to me is, what does this mean for Alex Galchenyuk and for Alexander Radulov? If it's Drouin in and those two out, then it's one step forward and two steps back. And that doesn't help the Canadiens. But they need to get those guys back. Apparently, we've heard some big numbers that Radulov's asking for. I wouldn't give him 6 years at $7 million either. But I think that asking price will eventually come down. And we've heard a lot of rumors about Alex Galchenyuk being traded, so it depends on what they get back for him. But that's my concern right now. I think the trade on its own is pretty good.
From Tampa Bay's perspective, man, where do you slot this kid? Do you put him top four just to see if he meshes well or can learn well from, say, a Hedman or Stroman or somebody else? Or do you leave him in the third pairing and just hope that he doesn't get exposed too much to, you know, or people don't find some sort of weakness in his game down there? I mean, obviously the third pairing usually is the one that people try to exploit, but would you rather have him with somebody stronger just, you know, to help him out at the beginning?
Well, the Lightning did play down the stretch Jake Dotchin with Victor Hedman when they were hot and chasing the playoff spot. Now, Victor Hedman's numbers, as far as analytics and things like that, really dropped when he played with Dotchin. You could see that he was carrying a young defenseman who simply was not experienced nor talented enough to be playing the type of minutes that he was getting. And so a lot fell on Hedman, and he had to really carry that player. So if they want to do that with Sergachev, they certainly could. Hedman is good enough to still keep his head and his pairing above water, even with an inexperienced defenseman beside him. And Sergachev is going to provide a bit more offense than Jake Dotchin did beside Hedman. That may be one way of going about things. The other is to kind of shelter him and bring him in slowly on the third pair, as you said. I think a lot will depend on how he looks in training camp and how ready he is. There's also the option, and if he doesn't play 40 games, the Lightning get a second-round pick here. There's also the option of sending him back to junior if he's not ready. But that's not ideal. I mean, if a defenseman isn't ready, you'd like to send them down to the minors where they can play a lot of minutes. But this is, again, the problem with the CHL-NHL transfer agreement. You can be too good for the Ontario Hockey League, like Sergachev is at this point. He's progressed beyond the Ontario Hockey League. And not be able to take a step forward because you aren't ready for the NHL and can't go to the AHL. So that might be a problem that Tampa faces in the fall in deciding what to do with him and where to play him. Because he needs to get the minutes, whether that's 13 minutes a game on the third pair or whether that's playing with Victor Hedman. He just needs some amount of minutes.
Well, for Tampa Bay, their offense should be good because even with all the injuries they had that last year, they weren't a terrible team. Obviously, they missed the playoffs, but they are probably the most decimated team throughout the season as far as injuries go. So I think that with Stamkos coming back healthy, hopefully, and Johnson, I don't know if he's going to get moved or not, but just I think top to bottom, they have one of the best top sixes in the league right now when they're all healthy. So if they can carry the load offensively, I think that it'll be okay. They'll get sheltered a little bit, and I think it'll be good. I just hope, obviously you hope that they don't get injured again. You also hope that, mind you, I think most people would say John Cooper, their coach, has been pretty good at dealing with young players throughout his career. So if anybody's got a feel for you know, a guy like that, I think it would be him. And obviously he didn't have that feel with Drouin, so he's gone now. But a good move by Stevie Y again. And I don't know, he's quickly becoming one of the best GMs in the league.
Well, the one thing that really stands out here is how cap-wise this made a lot of sense for Tampa. They really couldn't afford to sign Drouin, Tyler Johnson, Andre Palat. Kucherov comes up in a year's time. They were going to run into some real cap problems, and they have some other talented forwards in Braden Point, who played really well for them last year, and Adam Ernie on the way, and others in their farm system. So the Lightning really benefit from good drafting and good development that allows them to make these types of moves. If you don't get a Kucherov in the second round, you don't get an Andre Palat late in the draft, if you don't get a Braden Point in the second round, then you don't have the ability to move on from a Jonathan Drouin. You have to keep him, or you have to trade him for a similar type forward. You can't just move him to get a defenseman without creating another hole in your lineup. And that's a problem that Montreal's having right now, is that they simply have not developed enough good young players under Mark Bergevin's regime. And it's starting to show in terms of that this creates a hole on defense to get better at forward. And now you might have to move Alex Galchenyuk and create a hole on forward to find that top four defenseman. That's kind of what's going out there. So you got to respect what Yzerman's doing in terms of building his team and what his scouting staff and his development staff have done for him.
Fantastic. All right, moving on to our next trade. We have Mike Smith going to the Calgary Flames. And they are a team that obviously needed some help with goaltender. The details of this trade in return are Arizona gets a third-round pick, conditional defenseman Brandon Hickey, and goaltender Chad Johnson. Yeah. What do you make of this?
Well, let's talk about Chad Johnson first, because he's kind of the throw-in here and doesn't mean anything to the trade. Arizona had to protect a goaltender with at least 2 years of professional experience. They, after trading Mike Smith, they wouldn't have had a goaltender with over 2 years of professional experience on their roster. So they protected Mike Smith, Chad Johnson.
Chad Jones.
Who's a soon-to-be UFA, and he will still go UFA on July 1st. Arizona has said they have no interest in signing him, and he might go back to Calgary as the backup. So that's kind of he's kind of a throw-in. It's a really cheap price. I mean, a third-round pick and a B, C-level prospect in Brandon Hickey. You didn't give up a lot here. Arizona basically gets Mike Smith's contract off the books. He's an older goaltender, and Arizona's not ready to compete. So that's kind of things from their perspective. They're going to go looking for a younger goaltender who fits in line with the age and the players on their team. They've said that they're going to go after a starting goaltender. We'll see who they're able to acquire. The Flames are gambling again on goaltending and on going the cheaper route. I mean, you could have gone for Ben Bishop. You could have gone for try and make a trade for Marc-Andre Fleury. You could have tried a number of different options. But just like last year when they gave away an early second-round pick to get Brian Elliott, they're doing a third-round pick to get a veteran goalie who had a middle-of-the-pack save percentage in Arizona and are hoping that he reverts to an all-star form from a few years ago. And I'm not sure that this is going to be good enough for the Flames. I think the Flames are still going to have goaltending issues. I mean, I don't think they'll be, like, the worst goaltending in the league, but I think you're going to be middle of the pack or lower in terms of your goaltending. And I don't know how Calgary can look at themselves and go, we want to take the next step. We want to be more than just a team that gets one and done in the playoffs and not be serious about your goaltending.
To be fair to Mike Smith, at least, he's been pretty good in the playoffs through his career, and I think that's what they're more concerned about right now, is can he be clutch at the right time, because they, even when they had decent goaltending during the regular season, their goaltending failed them in the playoffs. They expect to be a playoff team, I think, at this point, with the talent that they have. So they assume that just with the talent they have from their skaters, they can make the playoffs. So why would you not just bring in a guy that you could hopefully say, hey, can you carry us once or twice in the playoffs? And I think Mike Smith has shown he's been able to do that at times in Arizona in the past, because Arizona's been terrible. And, you know, he still helped lead them to a Western Conference final once. He helped them upset a couple teams like the Blackhawks one time. I don't know. I think that if you can't get one of the primetime goaltenders, getting a guy that'll help you at the right moment might be worth it.
Yeah, I mean, that's always the theory. I don't know how much I buy into the clutch player theory, that players really step it up in the playoffs. I know some do, but is that a repeatable skill that you can do year in and year out? I don't know about that. The numbers and the people who analyze these things seem to suggest that it's not really a repeatable skill to expect a player to be better in the playoffs than they are in the regular season, year in and year out. So to me, it's getting a mediocre goaltender when you needed to do a little bit better than that if you're the Flames.
Fair enough. This trade, I don't think in the long term, like you said, it's going to matter that much. Unless Brandon Hickey turns into something unbelievable, I don't think that third round conditional pick is really going to be usually anything to speak to write home about. So,
where does Arizona go in the goalie market now? Now we've seen.
Well, I mean, they already have Louis Domingue, and he was supposed to be their goaltender of the future. He kind of had a regressive year, but I still think that they're banking on him potentially being the guy going forward.
They have talked about getting another goaltender in there to challenge with Domingue. I'm just wondering if this means guys like Philip Grubauer, Antti Raanta, Peter Mrazek, who are relatively young and who many were surprised didn't get picked in the expansion draft, now look for a trade to Arizona.
What do you feel? How do you feel about their minor league guy, Hunter Miska?
I think he's just a guy. I'm not sure that he may be a good NHL backup, but I don't know if he's there right now. And
he's won an NCAA championship, but I don't know how far that will take you. So.
Yeah, I mean. Lots of guys who's won NCAA championships and were just a guy, a backup goalie, or an NHL, AHL journeyman type careers. Doesn't really guarantee you a heck of a lot.
True. I'm just saying. I mean, he hasn't really played poorly, so I don't know. I was just taking a look, seeing what he's got. I mean, they're paying him almost $1 million right now, so. First cap, it's almost.
Yeah, I'm sure he's on I haven't looked it up, but I'm sure he's on a two-way where he gets a lot less in the AHL. All right, so everyone was expecting this big flurry of trades before the trade deadline freeze hit. That didn't happen. Apparently, instead of making trades to get something back for a player that you expected to lose, there were a few of those we saw. Nathan Beaulieu move, and we saw some other small deals, but the big flurry never really happened, and so the trade freeze kicked in, and the Vegas Golden Knights went about making trades with NHL teams and assembling their roster. What did you think of what the Golden Knights were able to do in the expansion draft, Dave?
It was a little underwhelming to me, and I know that they're making more moves and they're trading people. I was not shocked with how many defensemen they took, given the market right now. And I'm curious to see how many. I mean, we've already seen a couple get traded. But I thought that up front, maybe the biggest thing to me was that they got two guys that are 30 goal scorers, which is kind of shocking, given it's an expansion draft. So, but aside from that, I mean, I think we all expected Marc-Andre Fleury to go there. And there wasn't really that many other surprises that I saw. I mean, I don't know about you, but pretty much everything got leaked early and pretty much everyone expected. There was a couple of things like questionable on one of two or three guys per team, but I was kind of underwhelmed. They're going to be the best expansion team we've ever seen, obviously, just given the circumstances, but aside from that, I don't really know why they took maybe like Lucas Pizza, unless they plan on moving him. He's kind of terrible. I don't know who else they could have got from the Canucks though that would have been any value. And there's a couple other older guys that maybe like Mark Mathot, who's kind of carried by Erik Karlsson, was a little bit weird to me.
Yeah.
I think that maybe they could have gotten more value. I mean, maybe they didn't want to take the cap hit for some of the other guys, but like, what, like, is Mark Mathot really going to be a guy that's going to do much for that team at this point?
I don't think Mark Mathot will be in Vegas. We'll play a single game for Vegas. I think the heavy rumor at this point is Dallas, but I think he gets moved before July 1st, possibly even this weekend. The Golden Knights are all in about draft picks. You have 12 draft picks this draft. You have, which is five additional draft picks, including three in the first 15 picks, three second rounders. They're just loading up on picks. And so I think Mathot will be out for picks and prospects. I think Alexi Yemelin will be out for picks and prospects. I think some of their forwards will be out for picks and prospects. They've got a staff and an AHL team as well, and a lot of the guys they will draft will have that that problem that I talked about earlier where you can't send them to the AHL yet. So you're going to want some younger players who weren't available to be drafted per se, but who can you can develop and who will become your core for the future. I don't think the Golden Knights have any illusions about making the playoffs this year or next year. In their first 2 years in the league, I really don't. I think that this is all about they could have gone into the draft with a strategy to build an immediate playoff team, and they could have really given a fight for it. I don't know if they would have got in or not, who's to say, but they could have been as good as a bubble playoff team. They didn't want to do that. They don't want to be a bubble team. They're like, well, we'll take our lumps like an expansion team, and we'll draft these older players who will flip for prospects and draft picks, and we'll build for 5 years from now to win a cup.
So, when you look at this roster, I just want you to give me your favorite and your least favorite pick, and then I'll do the same. Because there's a couple guys that I find even more questionable.
I really like Jonathan Marchessault at the price that he comes in at. I think that getting a center is really tough. And in this draft, the way many teams protected seven forwards, meaning that they had three centers protected. And so I did think that's a tremendous pick. My questionable pick would be the pick from the Carolina Hurricanes. They only got Connor Brickley. And I understand, you know, there are some other picks where you were like, you know, J.F. Berube, what were they getting? Well, they got a first-round pick to make that selection. So the one that's questionable to me is Connor Brickley, because they got a guy who's never played an NHL game, who's going to need waivers to go to the AHL next year. And all they got for it was basically a fifth-round pick. When they could have taken someone a little bit better off the Hurricanes roster, that's the one I really question.
I'm not a big fan of Chris Thornburn, personally. I mean, I've heard he's a good locker room guy and whatnot, but I don't think he's going to bring anything to that team, and I don't think they have really any value in being able to trade him either.
No, so what you got for Thornburn was moving up from a pick in the 20s at 24th overall to the 13th overall pick, and that's quite a move in terms of draft value.
Well, yeah, I mean, in doing, yeah, I don't know. I don't really know in this draft. I don't know. I thought that was a little bit, I guess, when you look at it that way. But I think that he's pretty much the most worthless guy on that team.
Oh, I don't. Him or Derek Englund. And I mean, Derek Englund was made because he's a Vegas resident, basically, was the reason for that pick.
I was a big fan of what they did with the Ducks. They kind of bent the Ducks over a little bit. And I'm not just saying that because I'm a Kings fan. I mean, I'm laughing about it. But they got Shea Theodore and Clayton Stoner from the Ducks. I just. just so that I guess they wouldn't take Vatanen. I mean, what else would the Ducks do? I mean, Vatanen still might not be in the Ducks. I don't get what the Ducks were doing with that.
I don't either, to be honest. I would have rather kept Theodore and bit the bullet and lost Manson or Vatanen. I mean, the Ducks wanted to keep their experienced team together. They figure we need experienced defensemen in the playoffs, and I guess they figure with their forward core at the age that Ryan Kesler, Ryan Getzlaff, Corey Perry, and those guys are at, that you can't. You needed the experience on defense because your time to win is now, is the only thing I can figure from the Ducks' perspective. Because I would have rather kept Shea Theodore than the guys they were going to expose. They save a lot of money on a bad contract with Clayton Stone. I will give them that.
That's fair. And speaking of contracts, David Clarkson now part of the Vegas Golden Knights, so
that was the worst trade of the draft for anybody. Pulling that trade. This is the reality you have to remember if you're Columbus. Number one, you didn't spend to the cap last year, so you didn't, and you're probably still not spending to the cap in the next couple of years. Even if you were spending to the cap, Clarkson's going to be a guy on long-term IR who really isn't going to hurt you on the cap. So what have you saved there? Well, he makes $5.5 million in real money, and insurance picks up $4.5 million every year. So you're saving $1 million a year in real cash on David Clarkson. And you protected guys like Josh Anderson and what have you, and got them to take William Karlsson instead of Josh Anderson or Jack Johnson. For that, you gave up a first-round pick and a second-round pick. And William Karlsson's still a pretty good youngish piece among your forwards. It's not like you got them to take a total scrub.
No, I know. Yeah.
I don't understand that trade from Columbus's perspective. It doesn't save you that much money in terms of real money or cap hit, because Clarkson is all insurance and all long-term IR. So I don't get it. I don't get that pick at all.
That was the most interesting to me, too. And like you said, they got William Karlsson, who I don't think is terrible. Like, unless he's just not part of John Tortorella's plan. By the way, Jack Adams Award winner, John
Tortorella. I point to recent Jack Adams Award winners Bob Hartley, Paul McLean, and Patrick Waugh, who are all no longer head coaches in the NHL, to point to the value of that award.
Another trade, or another just terrible deal. I don't know if it's as bad as Clarkson deal from Columbus, but what were the New York Islanders doing?
15th overall is such a steep. I don't know what the insurance situation is on Mikhail Grabowski, but he only had 1 year left.
So they held four defensemen, four forwards instead of going the other route.
They went five, actually. Five defensemen.
Five, excuse me, yeah. So they went the extra defensemen. And then they still end up. What is it? I don't know. So they got rid of they lost Mikhail Grabowski, and then obviously they just traded for. Well, we'll get into that later, but what is Gar Snow doing? I mean, a lot of people questioned me before, but I just don't understand any of what they did. They lost not only a first round pick, but a second round pick next year. And a defensive prospect in Jake Biscoff, and Grabowski. It's just.
It boggles the mind because it's the 13th overall pick. It's not a low pick. Like I said with the trade up, or sorry, no, it's 15th overall. Sorry, it was the 15th overall pick. It didn't. you're going to have a half-decent... I know this isn't the best draft, and we'll get into how the draft looks later. I know this isn't the best draft, but still 15th overall. It's still worth, like, a first-rounder last year, like 25 or something. And you're still going to have a half-decent prospect there. So I don't know what they're doing. You can only lose one guy. You bite the bullet. Maybe you lose Brock Nelson. Maybe you lose Ryan Strome. Hey, whatever. You lost a guy. But this is a classic case of a team overvaluing the players on its own roster and undervaluing its draft picks for the future.
Well, this team hasn't always drafted very well, so maybe Gretzky was just like, I'm not good at that.
Yeah, we can go through that when we look at the Islanders some other Islanders who got picked, former Islanders top five picks who got picked in the expansion draft included guys like Griffin Reinhart, who looks like a total bust, got picked from the Oilers, and he was a former fourth overall pick. Terrible trade by the Oilers to acquire him as well, giving up the 16th pick, which turned into Matt Barzal, and the 33rd pick, which turned into Mitchell Stevens that year. That was a pretty terrible deal from the Oilers' perspective, and now they've lost Griffin Reinhart for nothing. Not that he was worth anything at this point.
Didn't the Islanders protect two Keiji Cizikas, the fourth liner?
Yeah. And the other thing, the weirdest one to me, the worst move in terms of what a team did with their protection list was the St. Louis Blues. They protected Ryan Reeves.
Yes.
And I know the Leafs protected Matt Martin, but the Leafs had nothing to protect. Like, all the Leaf players who are any good come in at that 2 years and under thing where they didn't have to be protected. Zaitsev, Marner, Nylander, Austin Matthews, all those guys didn't need to be protected. So it was like they had like five extra protection slots. So they protected Matt Martin. But the Blues protected Ryan Reeves and allowed David Perron to be picked by Vegas. A guy who had 18 goals last year and who was their big free agent signing a year ago. David Perron gave them exactly what they expected out of what they signed him for last year. It was a pretty fair value market deal, and he put up 18 goals. Why would you protect him over Ryan Reeves?
I don't know, but you lost David Perron over it. So I don't think David Perron's that big of a loss, but yeah, like you said, that seems questionable to me. I don't know if that's necessarily the worst move, but it definitely is questionable. Mm-hmm. All right, how about we take a break really quick and talk about how hot it is and what we can do to relieve ourselves of this problem.
It is getting especially hot all over North America. And if you're looking for a nice cold drink, then you should get yourself a Chill Puck. You can stick them in the freezer and they will freeze, keep cold, and get yourself set up for summer. Keep your drinks cold, won't dilute them like ice cubes do by melting into the drink. They attach pretty easily to the bottom of your beverage, whether that's a can or bottle, and certain round glasses as well. So get yourself a Chill Puck. Dave, you've got some. How do they work?
Well, for me at least right now, I have the day off tomorrow, so I have a beer with me, and it just attaches to the bottom of the beer and helps keep it cold. You freeze it in your freezer for a couple hours, and usually, because they come in packs, so you, especially if you're watching hockey per se, you can switch them out every hour and it'll help keep your drink cool throughout the entire game. Or the entire podcast.
Yeah, so you can check those out at chillpuck.com. And use the promo code LASTWORD, and you will get free shipping on your chill pug. All right, Dave. Getting back to what's going on in the NHL, we saw another big trade today. Another top five pick from the New York Islanders has been traded away as they ship Ryan Strome to the Edmonton Oilers for Jordan Eberle. Now, we all knew Jordan Eberle was getting traded. Didn't score a single goal. I think he only picked up a couple of assists in 14 playoff games, making $6 million. And the Oilers are going to need cap room to continue to build their defense, to re-sign Connor McDavid next year, and to re-sign Leon Draisaitl this year. So it's Jordan Eberle, part of their old big four of young prospects, which now three of them are gone, and Taylor Hall, Eberle, and Neil Yakupov. The only one left in Edmonton is Ryan Yakupov. So how does that... what do you think of this trade with these two, you know, young guys that a lot was expected of now getting traded for each other?
Well, from Edmonton's standpoint, they needed to clear some cap space because of Connor McDavid's contract coming up. But not just Connor McDavid. People are going to look at this, and if you look at it as a one-for-one, I think most people knew that Edmonton had to do this, which is why Peter Chiarelli is going to get... or is getting a little bit of criticism for trading a guy that's better for a guy that's potentially worse. And the thing is, everyone knows Edmonton has to sign not only Connor McDavid to probably what's going to be the largest contract in the history of the NHL, or at least the largest cap hit per season in the history of the NHL. And they also have to re-sign, just almost as importantly, Leon Draisaitl, in my opinion, because Leon Draisaitl is a stud, and he was obviously top 10 in scoring in the NHL. So, to me, he had to clear cap space, and he got somebody that's okay in return. I don't think this is as bad of a trade for the Edmonton Oilers in the long term as some people are criticizing him for. I think in the short term, yes, he gave up a better player for a worse player right now, especially on a team that potentially wants to consider themselves a cup contender in the next year or two. So it is tough when you look at it that way, but you can't, you know, as a GM, you have to look down the line. And I don't know how much more you're going to get for Jordan Eberle at this point. So I think maybe he could have later on, but will Eberle's value grow in the coming season with the fact that potentially he's not getting as many minutes anymore with the talent that they have there as he has in years past, where he played potentially a bigger role in their offensive game and had more minutes on the power play or something like that?
Yeah, and certainly, like I said, they needed to clear space. I think they get a talented player in Ryan Strome, who we all know can shoot the puck and make plays. Ryan Strome's going to be in a very good situation. He either plays right wing with a guy like Connor McDavid, possibly. That's one a potential landing spot for him. If Leon Draisaitl shifts back to center, could end up on the wing with Leon Draisaitl, who, as you said, is a stud. Or he could end up in an exploitation type role with Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, and the two of them can work together. Or he'll get a third line center spot and be playing against third defensemen all the time and get some exploitation minutes that way. No matter where they decide to put him in this Edmonton lineup, he's going to get a heck of an opportunity to really improve his stock and improve his position in the lineup and improve his production going forward from what he's had in the Islanders. He may not do as much as Eberle did with, you know, 60, 70 point seasons, but the Oilers have a lot on the way. They've got Jesse Puljujarvi, who didn't have an impact as an 18-year-old, but you know what? Leon Draisaitl didn't have much of an impact in Edmonton as an 18-year-old either, and look what he's done as a 19 and a 20-year-old. So don't give up and don't sleep on Jesse Puljujarvi taking a right wing spot with one of those top three lines with the Oilers as well. They've got players to replace Jordan Eberle, and they've saved the cap space to keep their team intact and continue to build that defense. The questionable move that the Oilers are rumored to be making is giving a whole lot of money and 3 or 4 years to Chris Russell. And I know Chris Russell played pretty decently for them this past year, but I don't know if I want to go $4 or $5 million over 4 years to Chris Russell. We've all seen the analytics on him, and they're quite frankly terrible.
Well, I think with the Chris Russell situation, it's a question of how prepared is Darnell Nurse to be a top four guy all the time. Obviously, you have Klefbom, Larson, Andre Sekera, and you have Chris Russell. If Darnell Nurse can be a top four guy, then I think that, you know, you could potentially part ways with Chris Russell and not be too concerned about it. But I don't know. Well, I mean, we'll see with that. I think Edmonton's obviously becoming a much more desirable place for people to play with Connor McDavid and the success they've had in the last season. So, especially with a change in management, I think that helps too. I mean, the city still is the city, and, you know, some people have criticized the city just for not being very exciting, but you brought in a GM who's won a championship, you brought in a different coach, you know, you brought in, oh, well, you lucked into getting Connor McDavid, and so if you can get some of the defensemen that will be on the market or maybe trade for somebody else in the next season. I don't think they're a cup contender next year. They might be, but I still don't think that they are. So I think you're really looking not next year, but the year after that. And you could probably get somebody by then, you know, to help you out. I don't think if Chris Russell's not part of your future, I don't think it's that big of a deal.
Yeah, that's kind of where I am as well. I don't think you spend the savings that you got in this trade on Chris Russell. I don't think that makes a lot of sense. All right, Dave. That's our major trades. There have been some minor ones. Trevor Van Riemsdyk going to Carolina. David Schlemko going to Montreal. That have happened today as well. But I think everybody's hunkered down for the big day of trades to be tomorrow at the actual NHL draft and Saturday at the actual NHL draft. Have to remember that GM spent last night in Vegas, so who knows how early they were up this morning. And then many were on planes this morning traveling from Vegas to Chicago for the draft. So that's one thing that's kind of happened.
I don't get why they didn't just have the draft in Vegas, too. Like, if they had given it to Chicago before, they could have just been like, hey, Chicago, we'll give it to you next year instead. Like, it seems so dumb to me that they didn't just, like, switch it up and say, why don't we just have that draft year, too, since everybody's here? Like,
yeah. No.
And you could have had all of your young stars, you know, be there, too, for the award show and whatnot. And I don't know. It's the NHL not marketing themselves well again, so, you know.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about the NHL awards. Any surprises come out of last night? I don't think we need to go award by award. People know who's won the awards, and we've previewed and who we thought should win and did win in previous shows. But what stood out? Did you watch the awards, and what stood out for you?
Well, there was a penguin doing a strip tease, so, you know, that was probably the highlight of the night. But aside from that,
the low light of the night was Marcel Dion being a creepy old man.
I mean, I think I get what he was saying. Like, that guy's been nothing but nice to me every time I've talked to him. I mean, he's kind of old school, you know? Like, I think he just really meant it in, like, an athletic, like, you know, appreciation. Like, if you look at, like, a bodybuilder or something and say, hey, that dude's got jacked muscles, then, you know, it doesn't seem that creepy. But when you're like a 60-year-old dude that's like, check out the legs on that gymnast, and she's like 20, it does look creepy. But I think I don't think he meant it to be that way, but who knows. Anyway, he did have the most awkward, because right after that, he's like, I spent the night with Johnny Goudreau last night. Like, dude, you're not helping yourself at all here.
Yeah.
That was
the
terrible.
little kid who gave the award to Craig Anderson, I thought he was fantastic.
Yeah.
Taking shots at the Canucks. He was a Canucks fan and taking shots at Vancouver. That was pretty funny. The Brian Bickle tribute left a tear in everyone's eye, I'm sure. I really thought he should have got the Masterton, but he wasn't even nominated. From Carolina, they had Derek Ryan nominated as their team representative. So the NHL.
Well, I think a lot of times it's a guy that comes back from something. So I think in that case, it's kind of like he found out this season. And
yeah,
then
he came back
I don't know.
From it. He came back to play one game.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Actually, on that note, though, I would like to say, since we had a game day thread on Reddit, and during that time, somebody's like, they only donated $20,000. I did, like, we were like, we have 30,000 people in the sub right now. Like, if we all donate a dollar, we could do that. So we're gonna be doing a fundraiser on Reddit to try to beat that 20,000, because we thought it was kind of cheesy, the NHL to only do like 20 grand on that. So
that's
I think
less
we're
than a grand a team.
I know. Everybody was like, what? Like 20 grand? And we're like, so a bunch of people on Reddit, we're gonna get a post up, and we've already contacted the Bickle organization. We're gonna see what they say, but we're gonna try to better that, because you know we have 400,000 subscribers. Like we're
yeah.
So anyway, but that's just a quick note on that. So.
Yeah, I'll throw some of the LWOS money at that. Certainly, our radio show money.
I was a little, like, I don't think there was any big surprises aside from maybe Tortorella. I think that some people felt, you know, a couple other coaches might have done a little bit better this season. But aside from that, huge night for Connor McDavid. Maybe the Ted Lindsay was a little surprise. Some people, I think you and I both felt that Sidney Crosby might have been able to win that.
Yeah. I'm not surprised. None of the awards really shocked me. Some of the voting shocked me. Like, to find out that there was a voter who had Sidney Crosby outside of his top five for the Hart, that's pretty shocking to me. To find out that there were several voters who had Erik Karlsson outside of their top three for the Norris, those were shocking to me. To find out that multiple people voted for Nazem Kadri for the Selke. Here's a guy who played less than a minute per game on the penalty kill for the Leafs. How can you be a Selke winner and not kill penalties? That makes no sense to me whatsoever. So how can people possibly vote for a guy who doesn't kill penalties? Like, do you watch? I know he matches up against top lines, but he doesn't kill penalties. How can you be the top defensive forward if you don't kill penalties? That's kind of an issue to me.
There was a guy that voted Torrey Krug second overall for the
yeah,
Norris. And I like how Joe Haggerty came out and was like, I wasn't that guy. Because even he was like, I don't want to go near that one.
Yeah, I don't want to be known as that much of a homer. Like, people know I'm a homer, but I don't want people to think I'm that much of a Bruins homer.
Yeah,
like, who? Like, that has to be a mistake. Like, Torrey Krug as the second best defenseman in the NHL last year? You got to be kidding me. So that was, those were my issues, were some individual votes, more than anything surprising.
Yeah, I was happy to see David Boyle win GM of the Year.
Yeah. I saw some Habs message boards today, and they were hilarious because Shea Weber finished sixth in Norris voting, and PK Subban didn't get a vote. Of course, Subban was injured for quite a bit of last season, so there was an issue there. But so you had the Habs fans who defend the Weber trade being like, look, Weber finished higher in the Norris. We got the better player, blah, blah, blah. And then you had all the people who defend Subban and the Nashville side being like, well, Mark Bergevin got zero votes for general manager of the year. and David Poyle won it. And what trade do you think did that? So, kind of had that back and forth going on today.
Well, it's interesting. I don't think... I know there's people in Ottawa that have an issue with the Norris Trophy, but I think that even though Erik Karlsson had a better second half, I felt Brent Burns' first half was so impressive that even though he slumped off a bit in the second half, he still deserved the Norris Trophy. And I know a lot of people will be like, oh, Erik Karlsson, did you see what he did in the playoffs? And he's the greatest defenseman of his era, and that's fine. I agree.
Both were made before the playoffs started. So
yeah, and it's just Brent Burns' first half of this season was just ridiculous. So
yeah, I don't have a problem with the Norris. All right, Dave, what are we looking for tomorrow night in the NHL draft? It seems like it's down to two guys at first overall. For you, is it Nico or is it Nolan?
I personally like Nico better, but I have not got to see Nolan play as much as you probably have. I know there are some guys. We had Grant McKeag do an AMA. He's from recruits.ca. He did one last week. He has Miro Hiskinen going first overall, and I thought that's really weird, but obviously New Jersey needs defense, and this is a guy that's a former NHL scout. I think he's just doing that to gain some clicks on his website, but...
It's his first year running the website. Yeah, he used to be with McKean's.
Yeah. For the record, since he probably isn't going to listen to this, he's a total dick.
You know what? I've had some interactions with him, and I can confirm that.
I've never had anybody, like... who I was like, hey, we have a huge audience of hockey fans that, you know, like talking to people and want to get some feedback from you. And I didn't even ask him to do this initially. I did. I take that back. I wasn't the one that was like, hey, let's do this guy. It was like one of the other mods was like, hey, what do you think about this guy? I was like, all right. And he was just nothing but a dick to me by email. And then he wrote back, he like quit the AMA like halfway through and was like, there's only like three good questions. And I was like, dude, okay. And then he came back when I was like, we're leaving it up for 24 hours. Like, if you want it, I don't know.
Answer some more, yeah. Yeah, no, it's kind of weird. He's kind of that way on HF. He's on HF all the time. It's kind of the same way on HF. He's been a bit of a... And he always has these controversial picks. Like, last year he had Mike McLeod as, like, the third overall guy. This year he's going with this Miro Heiskanen. And I'm sorry. There is no way that the first overall pick is anyone other than those two players. I just do not see it. I cannot see a team going that way and taking a different player in one of the first two slots in Nico and Nolan. I think if you want a defenseman, you can trade back and get quite the bounty for your trade back because there are teams that want Nico or Nolan and are willing to give up. Vegas, you know, would probably give up pick number 6 and pick number 13 to move to number 1. I'm sure they would. And you could get a Cale Makar or a Timothy Liljegren at 6 who are... Maybe they're not as good as Miro Heiskanen, but they're awful close. And so I don't see the appeal of taking... When guys from 3 to 15 are so close, and 1 and 2 are so far ahead, I don't see the appeal of not trading back to 5 or 6 or 7 and getting something for your pick if you don't want one of those centers.
Yeah, I don't know.
To me, there's 4 defensemen who are really close. And if you get one of those 4 and you get an extra pick, and, you know, you can get 6 and 13. If you're looking for defensemen, you can get 6 and 13 and end up with Cale Makar and Timothy Liljegren. And isn't that better than just having one Miro Heiskanen?
Of course, yeah. What do you think about the rumor right now, though, that Vegas might move up to second?
I think Vegas has the assets to do it. They have 6 picks in the first 2 rounds, 3 in the top 15. And like I said, if Philly is not enamored with the two guys, one of the two guys who's going to be left to them, if you've got the injury concern with Nolan Patrick, or you just don't like Nico for whatever reason, or don't, and you want to get 2 picks in the top 13, you can do that. And extract quite the price from Vegas to do it. So like I said, I don't know about Philly trading. I think Jersey is more of a likely to trade back because you can get 2 defensemen. But Philly, you got a ton of defensemen. Take your center, get your center and move on. If I'm Philly, but there's other centers available, yes. But I just don't think they're on par with the two guys at the top.
Fair enough.
Where do you think Dallas is going at third?
Probably Kale Maker. Makar. However you pronounce it, his name.
I don't know his name that way. Just
I mean, that's it. Oh, excuse me. I shouldn't say that. I was thinking, obviously, they need defensemen, so Heiskanen would be the obvious choice. So. Yeah.
Well, I mean, Corey Pronman has Makar above Heiskanen, so it's not as clear-cut. Most people do have Heiskanen as their top defenseman. We do. But it's not it's almost like a Nico Nolan situation with Makar as well. And Heiskanen as to who's the top defenseman.
Well, I think the size plays a factor. Although Makar is technically listed as heavier, he is shorter, so I don't know. But I think they're definitely going defenseman.
Yeah, I think that Dallas goes for a defenseman. I think the team that got screwed here is Colorado. I think they need to go defenseman as well. I think that you might see that Heiskanen and Makar go 3-4. And then you're going to see a lot of centers come off the board. Guys like Gabe Vilardi, Cody Glass, Elias Pettersson, Nick Suzuki, Michael Rasmussen, Casey Mittelstadt. A lot of those. Are you concerned about Casey Mittelstadt only doing... or not being able to do a pull-up at the combine and only being able to do one bench press at 80% of his weight?
Yeah, I think so. I think a little bit. It always plays a factor, but I don't think it's like that big of a deal. I mean, I don't know what the stats are in everybody throughout history, but you look at a guy like Johnny Gaudreau, who I'm not saying he's in the same category, but... You know, if a guy can play, he can play regardless, so.
Yeah, and I think if you've got a good body like Mittelstadt does in terms of size and what have you, there has to be teams that look at him and go, look, he's physically weak, and he's dominating the players his age. I want to get him in here. I want to get him with a nutritionist. I want to get him with my weight trainers, and I want to work him and build up his physical strength and his body, and we'll see what happens to him. So I think that there are definitely players out there who think the opposite, who see it as a good thing that they're getting a player who is a very good hockey player without being very strong, and thinking strength and muscle is the easiest thing for an 18-year-old to put on. We can't wave a magic wand and take a strong, big, strong player who can't score goals and make him into a goal scorer. That's not going to happen. But if you've got a guy who already can score the goals and isn't very strong, you certainly can make him stronger.
Yeah. Is there anybody that you are projecting as a sleeper in the first round?
I think Nick Suzuki is going to go a lot higher than people are projecting, and I know they're projecting him in the 12 to 15 range right now. I wouldn't be surprised to see Nick Suzuki go in the top 10. And so one of the more intriguing names on the board for later in the first round is Erik Brännström. Pure boom or bust prospect, a 5'10" defenseman, small from Sweden, but puts up monster stats in Sweden, the type of stats that Erik Karlsson was putting up at the same age. So he's got all the offensive ability in the world. He's got all the skating and the puck skills and the shot and all the offensive. He's not bad defensively in terms of positioning and stick checks, but he's not physical and he gets overwhelmed by bigger, stronger forwards. So that's a real boom or bust pick. Another real boom or bust pick, a forward with similar type of things, you know, really, really good stats in the WHL is Kyler Yamamoto, the American winger for Tri-City, who scores a ton of points, but is very small, basically Johnny Gaudreau sized. And where will he go in the first round?
I mean, you would know better than I would, but I think that you know, unfortunately, I don't get to watch all these guys as much in junior as you guys in Canada do. I wish I could, but is there anybody in particular as far as goaltenders go that you feel is either overhyped right now or maybe underhyped right now?
I think that the first goalie off the board will be Jake Oettinger, and I feel like he's getting good buzz, could be a first rounder depending on what teams late in the first round decide to do, who need goaltending. But underhyped, I think, is Stuart Skinner. Stuart Skinner came into the season as the best goalie in the draft. That's where he was looked at before the season started. Played on a very bad team and got lit up. But he made a lot of saves, too. And to me, his season and his stats and that were completely a reflection of the fact that he was on a last-place hockey team and faced so many shots and so much rubber than it is that he suddenly turned into a bad goalie. So people are looking at him as a third or fourth rounder right now. I think if a team snaps him up in that range, they're going to get a real steal.
All right. Who's your favorite player in this draft?
The obvious is Nolan Patrick.
Like your personal favorite. I mean, Nolan Patrick. Like, is there somebody that you think could just end up
later in the draft in terms of sleepers? I really like Josh Brook on defense, looking like a late second, early third rounder. I think he could have, you know, I think he easily could has the skills to be a first rounder, and I think he can be a real steal there. And for a center, Jack Studnicka, who played for Oshawa. I think that he really exploded. He had a mediocre first half, but he didn't get a lot of minutes on Oshawa. And then Oshawa realized, you know, we're a pretty good team, but we're not a contender because the other division, we're in the Eastern Conference. Western Conference is stacked with Erie and Windsor and London and Owen Sound and Sault Ste. Marie. You guys are just completely stacked in that conference. So they started selling some pieces off. They traded away Anthony Cirelli. And suddenly Jack Studnicka found himself as the top line center in Oshawa and had a tremendous second half of the season. So I think he's undervalued because teams who saw him in the first half of the year when he wasn't necessarily getting the minutes may not realize how good he played in the second half.
Sounds good. Anything about the draft you want to discuss? I mean, we've talked about the draft picks for Vegas and how they're stocking up and this draft class being a little bit weak. I don't think this draft class is terrible, even though it just hasn't compared to the last couple ones. If you had to say that this was similar to another draft class within the last decade, is there one that you would point it at? Perhaps the, I mean, I have several people have made comparison to the Taylor Tyler draft, but.
Well, the Taylor Tyler draft is Nico and Nolan, and certainly I understand that comparison completely. In terms of an overall draft, though, I'm looking at something like 2007. It was seen as a weaker draft, but you still have some absolute gems come out of that draft. You have a Jamie Benn in the fourth round. You have a PK Subban come in the second round. You have a Max Pacioretty come late in the first. You got your David Perron. You've got some really good players. Ryan McDonough in that draft. That's, of course, 2007. That's the Patrick Kane draft at the top. And, yeah, I think that this draft overall looks similar to that. It's not the greatest draft. It's not 2003 or anything like that. But it's not 1999 either, where you basically have the Sedins and then a whole lot of nothing throughout the rest of the draft. So it's better than the 99 draft. It's not at that historically bad level that some people have placed it at. It's around 2007 or so.
That's fair. I think I don't know if we'll ever see a draft class as bad as 99, though, to be honest. I just think with the way the game developed and with the way the international game has grown, things like that, it's just there's way too much competition. There's leagues in Europe now where people, you know, to play. So, especially with the way the U.S. developmental team and things like that have grown here. So, I don't know if we'll ever see anything like that. So, that's probably the worst draft ever.
Okay. Yep. No, that's fair. All right. So, let's wrap it up. We'll watch the draft, and we'll come in with a free agency preview next week.
Sounds good. What else you guys got going on at Last Word right now?
Well, we're going to do some free agency previews next week, but our biggest weekend of the year is the NHL draft. We have 80. Go to Last Word on hockeyprospects.com. Look for our 2017 NHL draft headquarters. You got 80 profiles of our top 80 guys, all at like 700 words each. You've got another 20 profiles to take you to 100 at about 150 words each. And then you've got a two-round mock draft. You've got Max Marco's mock draft. You've got team needs. Top to bottom, you name it, we put it in there. I personally think I've looked at a lot of sites. I've bought guides. I've done all kinds of stuff. I think that this is the best free resource on the internet for the NHL draft. I don't think I love Last Word and whatever, and I know that there are areas we need to get better. There are areas where we can improve. To me, this is the best thing that we do, is our NHL draft coverage, and I think it's the best free guide that you can find out there on the internet.
Sounds good. Well, on my side, we will most likely, according to his people and in briefly talking to him, we will have Kerry Lawless stopping by to do an AMA next week and talk all things Vegas hockey. So right. I know we've already talked a bit here, but if you don't know Kerry Lawless, he's worked for NHL before. He is now the Vegas Golden Knights, basically just what would you call him, just their team reporter?
PR guy,
he's basically
host. It's hard to say, but yeah, it's social media.
Similar to, say, John Rosen for the Kings, who's the LA Kings insider, basically employed by the team, dishes out all the information So, yeah, he's going to be the inside guy for the Vegas Golden Knights. He's supposed to come by next week. I don't know what day yet, though, because his people have not confirmed, but they said they want to do it the week of the 26th, so should be cool.
Sounds good.
All right. Anything else?
No, that sounds pretty good. That's a pretty good show tonight, Dave.
All right. Appreciate it.
All right. Talk to you next week.
Take care.
You too.